Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Joining me right now is Washington's starting center, Tyler Biotish. Later on this afternoon out in Loudoun County, Tyler is teaming up with Mercy Chefs to give out 500 backpacks filled with food to students at Guilford Elementary School and Sterling Middle School. More on that coming up here shortly. But, you know, I've had you on the show before, and I was just thinking as I was waiting for you to call in, when you do these, and I'm not talking the run-of-the-mill post-game or, you know, the week of a game, but in the off-season when you get asked to do interviews, what percentage of the questions are about Jaden?
Well, it all depends. Yeah, I mean, it really does depend. I mean, depending on how and what you're asking, but
No, but you know what I'm saying. Like, you're the center. There's this, you know, understanding among football fans that there's a relationship that's, you know, typically very close between center and quarterback. And given the year that he had, I would bet you get asked a lot about him because I'm about to ask about him. But I was just curious as to how much, you know, ends up being about Jaden. What are the big differences with Jaden coming into year two?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, Jaden, he sets a tone, and, you know, obviously, you know, he's a leader by example, but also his voice and how he sets the tone each and every day. And you can see the improvements that he's put on, whether it be, you know, getting in the weight room, film session, you know, coming in early, getting walkthroughs done early, before, you know, a lot of people are already in the building. So, I mean, the biggest part for him, I think, is just his approach to it and staying consistency and just finding those edges, you know, and that's part of the game too, is just finding like how exactly can you get better, you know, each and every day, whether it be 1%, and just keep on stacking days. And he's making tremendous strides, and like, you know, we're always excited for him. But also, like, you know, it just puts more ownership on us. Obviously, you're speaking to the center, so putting more pressure on us in regards to making sure we have a clean pocket so he doesn't have to run around too much in regards to that. But, I mean, you know, he has a great approach to it and a great attitude each and every day. So, you know, obviously blessed and super grateful to have him, you know, doing leadership and everything too.
Is he different physically? Has he gotten bigger and stronger? Because there was that, you know, photo circulating around the internet about a week and a half ago, and everybody thought he looked like, you know, a little bit stronger at the very least. What do you say?
I think he's definitely stronger. I mean, for sure. Obviously, physically and mentally. I mean, just his approach to it. You know, you can see it in his demeanor each and every day, and just the attitude of just attacking whether we're doing a walkthrough, you know, him doing his reads, or whether we're in a practice, running through, or whatever it is, you know, he's going hard, and, you know, he's putting, like, max effort in each and everything he's doing. So, like I said before, like, you can't say enough great things about him.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk to you about the differences between year one and year two in a new regime. Last year, new coaching staff, new roster for all intents and purposes, and the results were incredible, clearly, for a year one. But I think many have a sense from the outside looking in that when you change as much as this organization did last year, sometimes it takes time, even though it didn't appear to need much last year. But can you speak to the differences between, you know, last year and this year at this time?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, year one to year two, there's a lot of different, you know, modalities and the whole thing. I mean, obviously, like, year one, you're coming into the new offense, you know, as a group too, obviously, you know, coming with a new head owner, GM, head coach, offensive coaches, everything, a lot of guys coming in free agency, like myself. But going into year two, it's also really good too, because we have, like, a lot of chemistry coming forth, and you have a lot of, you know, that same mentality of, like, scheme coming from the year before. So there's a lot of, obviously, differences, but there's so much continuity and chemistry, and, you know, obviously the bonding throughout, you know, the last, you know, how many months we were together this last season, like, you know, 8 to 9 months. So, I mean, there's a lot of great things, obviously, coming up from year two, and you get to work on a lot of the improvements, and you work on to maintain your strengths in regards of the scheme, or whether that's run, play action pass, pass pro, whatever it is. But that's obviously my position. But yeah, definitely looking forward to the whole thing.
The reputation of this organization, Tyler, has changed so much over the last 12 to 14 months. You know, you were in Dallas. You understood what Washington was before you came here. But now, like, there's this vibe, this culture vibe, that everybody thinks it is now one of the most desirable places in the league to play. What does that mean specifically when you're a player and you look at a place and you say, yeah, I'd play there?
Yeah, I think it comes from the top down. You know, obviously, our owner Josh Harris and GM AP and Coach DQ. I mean, we've had a great coaching staff to give us, obviously, the resources, but having a precise plan, exactly what they want out of us. And, you know, like how DQ said before, like, we're hunters, man. We go for it. And the bottom line is, you know, what we put on film, you know, that's who we are. So, you know, obviously, desirable place in regards of, you know, how we get after it, how it gets down on the field. So I think a lot of the film, you know, does the talking for that. But in regards of, you know, how we, you know, set the tone and how we play the game, I think that speaks for itself.
What are your early impressions of Josh Connerly Jr.?
I think he's really great. I think he's doing really good. His approach is very, you know, he has a lot of talent, and, you know, this spring, it's great. Since he's been here, he's made tremendous strides in regards of, you know, run game and pass pro. And this is awesome. You know, we have our OTA practices, and we have our mini camp coming up. But just, you know, obviously a rookie coming in, just getting into the speed of the game. Obviously college and NFL is a little bit different in regards of that.
I know he hasn't been at OTAs, but do you have a sense of what Laramie Tunsil is going to bring to the offensive line?
Obviously what he's done, right? I mean, you know, he has a great, you know, approach to it, super professional in regards of how he takes care of his craft and just what he's put on film. I mean, his demeanor and his immediate presence in regards of run game and pass pro. So I'm really excited about it.
So, Tyler, this time of year, when we are still a few months away from games and the draft is in the rear view, along with most of free agency, you get what I call list and ranking season, where you have a lot of opinion pieces or analytics, you know, rankings of position groups or wide receiver duos or whatever it is. And I'm just curious, do you pay attention to any of that, like where you would be ranked in a given, you know, analytics ranking of the position? You know, there are only 32 starting centers. Do you pay attention to any of that stuff?
Not particularly. I mean, you know, you always want to keep getting better each and everything, but obviously, you know, you want to stay, as much as media is a part of our sport, you know, you want to stay outside of that.
Do you care or pay attention at all to things like PFF grades on, you know, how you played in a particular game as an example?
I don't really have a comment on that.
you know what I'm talking about, Pro Football Focus.
Sure.
Yeah, so is your lack of commenting on it because you don't think that they know what they're doing, or is it because they're a big client of the NFL and I think all 32 teams, and there'd be some sort of conflict of, you know, interest or something like that?
No, I mean, honestly, like, I just really don't know how that's all graded down. You know, obviously, like, I don't think it's graded in regards of each and every team. I don't know who really is grading it.
Right.
Do you?
I don't, you know what? I think I know one of the guys that grades, you know, our team, you know, your team. But I don't know how they do it either. I don't.
I mean, you know, you have respect for, like, you know, some of that stuff. It's more so like, you know, how we're getting coached and what's the scheme in regards to that and, like, how it's all getting graded down. But at the same time, like, you know, the success that we have and the scheme and how we approach the game, it's internal. Like, it's in here, it's in our facility, it's through the coaches and players. It's sometimes it's not always about PFF, and, you know, sometimes, like, you're told to do different things, and, like, you know, how are you supposed to, like, you know, really look at that,
right,
in regards of, like, you know, how is it getting graded? But, like, I don't really pay attention to too much of that stuff. So.
You know, it's always been to me, Tyler, like, baseball, every single thing that happens in baseball is measurable. In football, with 22 players on the field at the same time, when the grader doesn't even know what the player's responsibility on a given play is, it just makes it much more difficult to grade. And I think your positions in particular, the offensive line, is very hard to grade. That would be my view on it. I don't know if you have a comment on that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I'm not really sure.
All right. What'd you think about the schedule?
We play who we play.
I know, but it got all the primetime games, the attention paid on Washington. You were used to it in Dallas with all the primetime games. But I'm just curious if other than you play who you play, did anything else stand out?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I noticed, like, the primetime games. You know, we're playing more, like, night games for sure. But, like, it's like each and every other year in regards of, like, you're playing a different division outside of your own.
Right.
You know, like, we're playing the North this year. But, like, in regards of, like, the schedule, I mean, obviously, like, you know, prime time is always, it's always fun to play under the lights for sure in that regard. And but, no, I mean, obviously each and every year it's always a blessing to be able to be healthy and to go out and play, you know, the game you love. So that's kind of why I say, you know, we play because it's always a, you know, super, super grateful just to have that opportunity each and every year.
All right, one more, and then we'll get to what you're doing on Monday. I know it's early. I mean, it's June 6th. But is there a player that you have a gut feel, and maybe you and other players out there have a gut feel, is going to surprise people through the rest of the summer and then into the season? Maybe a player that, you know, we fans aren't thinking about?
No, I mean, obviously we made some, you know, additions, obviously, in regards to my position for, like, offensive line. But, no, I'm excited for, like, Josh. I mean, you know, he's coming in hot. You know, he's coming in, you know, full head of steam. So, I mean, you know, obviously super excited for him. But also, like, you know, we had some position changes, too, with Brandon Coleman at left guard and obviously bringing in LT, you know, and Laramie at left tackle. So, you know, I'm just really excited just to see how we gel, you know, in regards of, like, obviously you have OTA practices and mini camp coming up right now. And, you know, obviously when we put the pads on, you know, I think it's July, going into camp. No, just super excited about that opportunity because obviously you're talking to an old lineman. But in regards of, like, you know, our offense, obviously getting additions, you know, like Debo and just having him and his skill set on display and, you know, getting guys back that were kind of banged up last year, like Noah Brown, and even getting guys like Michael Gallup, too, for additionals, too.
All right, let's finish up with what you're going to be doing Monday with Mercy Chefs. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we partnered up with Mercy Chefs. You know, obviously, in regards to food insecurities. We're going to fill 500 backpacks with Loudoun County students, sending them home with some food. And we're super excited and grateful to, you know, be a part of the community with my foundation. And Mercy Steps has been a great partner that I've used in the last, you know, 2 years. So just really, really super excited to get out in the community and just, you know, spread that awareness.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Later on this afternoon, Sterling Middle School, Sterling, Virginia, from 3 to 4 p.m., Tyler and his foundation teaming up with Virginia-based disaster relief and humanitarian aid organization Mercy Chefs to give out 500 backpacks filled with food to students from Guilford Elementary School and Sterling Middle School. Best of luck later on today, Tyler. Really appreciate you doing this.
I really appreciate it, Kevin. Thank you.
Tyler Biotish, everybody. Mini camp underway tomorrow. 3 days of scheduled mini camp. And, of course, the story going into that will be Terry McLaurin. Ben Standig will join us at 12 to talk about that.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way. At the exact same time, like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We are always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. We'll get back to the Commanders coming up at 6 o'clock. Our pick 6 at 6, where you'll hear from Dan Quinn and more. Dietrich Wise, Commanders defensive lineman, at 6:30. Right now, though, our one Commander's turn away today goes to a story that we talked about yesterday. One of the writers of it, or the writer of it, joins us now. Taylor Lyons, a sports reporter for the Baltimore Sun, and he has spent the last couple of weeks and really probably last month and change diving into what the heck happened at the University of Maryland, where, of course, Kevin Willard ultimately exited as the men's basketball coach. Damon Evans also exiting as the athletic director, and found some interesting stuff. So, Taylor, appreciate your time. Great work, first of all, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, of course. What's going on? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, thank you. And let me start off here, Taylor. Like, you obviously knew a lot, as many of us did, going into this based off what was said in public. Like, so much of this played out publicly, which in some ways was the issue at hand here. So what ultimately did you find that you felt was new and important as you started to dive into this story?
Yeah, so I don't think I was breaking any news by saying Kevin Willard and Damon Evans didn't like each other. I think that was pretty well known.
Right.
I think the thing that surprised me, though, was how far back this went and just the overall scope of it. I mean, the very first quote in the story from Harry Geller, who ran NIL for the Maryland men's basketball team, said that Willard was unhappy, you know, from the first week he met him in 2022. He said, Willard said, his first week on the job, I've never seen a place that cares less about winning in basketball than Maryland. And then, you know, that kind of festers over the next 3 or so years. And there were points where it kind of bubbled up and became public. I mean, Damon Evans, back this past January, went on the radio and said, hey, Kevin, you got to start winning some more road games. And that kind of agitated Kevin a little bit. And then obviously the infamous press conference right before the NCAA tournament where Willard kind of divulges Evans' plans. He says he's probably going to SMU. No one knew that at the time. Even, you know, those Evans' closest allies in the athletic department didn't know that. So led to a really, you know, kind of messy kind of falling out that I kind of described in the piece, that, you know, that frustration that bubbled over the 3 years Willard was in College Park and then finally kind of spilled over for everyone to see.
So what I think is interesting about the piece, Taylor, there's a lot of interesting things in the piece, but one of the things that in terms of that relationship is funny, interesting, weird, is that there's a lot of folks, or at least a couple folks that you cite, that think Willard would have stayed if Evans had stayed. Is that a fair, like, did I read that correctly? That even though these two did not like each other and did not get along, that it was still in some ways a very productive, even if not beneficial for either of their health, productive relationship, and perhaps Willard would still be at Maryland if Evans was still the AD?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I would kind of push back maybe a little bit on, I think the quote you're referencing from the one booster who I spoke with, who, you know, met with athletic department officials regularly. He said that, you know, he thought Willard would stay if Damon had also stayed, like you just mentioned. I think I would kind of push back on that. I think Willard had kind of been looking for an exit for a little bit, and so had Damon Evans. So, you know, he did say in the tournament that, you know, I don't have anyone to negotiate with. I don't have anyone to negotiate a new deal with. I need this, this, and this, and I don't have anyone to talk to for it. So, yeah, I don't know. I think they had both been kind of looking at their own exit strategies for, you know, probably dating back a few months, maybe even years, who's to say. But, I don't know if Willard would have stayed even if Damon did.
Gotcha. So the quote accurate, the whether or not that person is actually correct in their assessment, that is at the very least up for debate. Taylor Lyons, sports reporter for the Baltimore Sun, with us here on the Hoffman Show. So when you look at the types of things that Willard was complaining about and why he said that incredibly damning quote that you already referenced of, I've never seen a place that cares about winning less than the University of Maryland. Like, does he have valid complaints here about what Maryland wants to be as a basketball program and what the reality is? Or is this a coach who, for whatever reason, just didn't like it and was looking for reasons to complain?
I think it's a little bit of all of that. I think it's yes and no. I think some of his complaints were valid. I think the biggest thing that everyone kind of points to is that night in New York back in December when the Terps played Syracuse in Brooklyn, and he was told that his team wasn't allowed to stay overnight in New York an extra night because it cost too much. So, I mean, there were examples like that over the 3 years that, you know, certainly made those complaints valid. But also, I think Willard was just a guy who asked for more and more and more. You know, most of those requests were fulfilled. I mean, one of the details in the piece, the Terps played in Louisville a few years ago. And you know, Louisville Stadium had this kind of private lounge for its donors. And Willard goes to Damon and says, "Hey, let's get that in College Park. Let's get that in Xfinity." And they did that. So I mean, there were certainly times where Willard's complaints were valid over the money and the finances and what was and wasn't possible. But I think ultimately it was more so just a coach who kept asking for more and more and more. And the answer was yes most of the time. And I think that's what kind of pushed Evans out was, hey, I have this coach who's frankly annoying me. And I just wants to get out of that relationship.
So if he keeps saying yes, though, and some of these things are fair, is there also a larger structural problem at Maryland for not being able to anticipate some of these things? The fact that Willard had to ask for some of these things where he should have just been able to have them already, because that's the standard that, you know, Maryland claims that they want to be as a top flight basketball program. And the reason I ask that question, Taylor, is because is this the kind of stuff that Buzz Williams is going to run into as well? Or is this more specific to Willard and particular desires that are more personal to him?
Yeah, that, I think that remains to be seen with Buzz. I think to the structural part that you mentioned, I think the biggest thing here that, you know, Willard didn't have that a lot of his competitors did have is a GM, a general manager, that a lot of, you know, college football, college basketball teams have nowadays, where the general manager is the one who runs the NIL. He's negotiating the contracts. You know, once revenue sharing comes starting next year, they're going to be the ones handling that. And the coaches to really just focus on the football or focus on the basketball. Willard didn't have that at Maryland. They relied on, you know, volunteers, on donors who kind of stepped up and assumed those roles. So I think that, you know, speaking to the structural part, Maryland just plainly just lagged behind its competition in terms of, you know, the responsibility it put on its coaches, where Willard's having to outsource those duties to volunteers, while, you know, several other teams, even in the Big Ten, have full-time general managers on staff to handle that, you know, to handle those responsibilities.
So is that, like, where does the buck stop with that stuff? Is that a universe? And also, I guess, you know, where does the buck stop is, I think, a general good question to ask about this story. When you look at some of those types of things we've been talking about, or the fact that all this toxicity, Taylor, was allowed to fester and get into the public, is that, does that fall at the feet of Damon Evans? Is that personal responsibility for Willard? Or do you go even higher on the ladder and take a look at university president and be like, hey, man, like, how'd you let this all go down on your watch?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say all three. You know, obviously, in terms of the story getting out, the main people I talked to for the story were donors and boosters, people that were close with Willard and Damon Evans. So obviously, some of that onus falls on them, but also Daryl Pines. I mean, Pines is the one who ran the search that led to Buzz Williams and Jim Smith. So I mean, if you want to go as high as you can up to the top, certainly Daryl Pines bears some of the responsibility here.
So as we wrap up here with Taylor Lyons, sports reporter for the Baltimore Sun, he wrote the investigative piece going inside what happened with Damon Evans and Kevin Willard at Maryland. Very much worth your time in the Baltimore Sun yesterday is when the story came out. We talked about it. Now lucky enough to have Taylor on with us today. Like, where does Maryland go from here? Buzz is a very unique character in college basketball. He's kind of the ultimate plug and play. Just like, he's a program in a box. You unpack him, he does his thing, and eventually he packs the box back up and he goes somewhere else. But you also have, as you referenced at the end of the piece, you have a football program that has not won for the level that the coach is necessarily being paid at, compared to, you know, if you look around the other people in his pay grade. You have now, you know, a bunch of former players who are trying to collect NIL money that they think they're due, and there's potential litigation there. Like, where does Maryland go from here, and what are the most pressing issues moving forward for the athletic department?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot going on. I think in the short term, like you mentioned, the NIL stuff with the former players, they got to figure that out. The thing you're referencing, Jacoby Gillespie, the former guard now at Tennessee, he's taking a collective that Maryland partners with, Blueprint, to mediation over money, NIL money that he claims he's owed. His camp told me that Blueprint stopped paying money after he transferred, even though it did not say in his contract that he would stop getting paid if he transferred. The collective says, no, it did say that in his contract that he would stop getting paid if he transferred. So right now it's just that he said, she said. They're going to go to mediation this month to figure that out. But that's the short term. Long term, I think the biggest question Maryland has is they have to figure out if they want to be a football school or a basketball school. Maryland came out in a press release shortly after Willard left and said that we offered Kevin Willard a contract that would have given him one of the highest revenue sharing budgets and would have made him one of the highest paid coaches in the Big Ten. Now, with the revenue sharing, with the, you know, kind of de facto salary cap we're going to have starting next year, that money has to come from somewhere, and it's going to be football. So if they have one of the best funded men's basketball rosters, they're going to have one of the lowest funded football rosters, and vice versa. And like I mentioned too, Loxley, you know, is one of the losingest coaches in the Big Ten over the last, you know, 5-6 years that he's been here, and he has a new boss too. So there's a lot to be, you know, remains to be seen over the next few years. I'm fascinated to see how the relationships unfold between Jim Smith, Mike Loxley, and Buzz Williams now.
Taylor Lyons, sports reporter on the Baltimore Sun. Taylor, this was a really great piece to read. Good work on all of this, and we look forward to reading what else you write over as we answer the questions you just laid out.
Yep, definitely. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Taylor Lyons with us here on The Hoffman Show.
Iamsville, Maryland, so it's up the road a little bit, actually not far from where my father-in-law lives, but it's a wonderful charity in honor of this guy's dad who passed away from leukemia. A whole bunch of celebrity guests, Marshall Faulk, Clinton Portis, Santana Moss, Warren Sapp, and a bunch of others will be there for it. It's a great cause, but it's this weekend, Friday the 13th, in fact, at Whisker Creek Golf Course.
That's a Miami heavy influence with CP, Tana, Warren Sapp, the U is well represented, then you get the Hall of Famer, Marshall Faulk. Let's talk to Clinton Portis, back on with us here on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. CP, great to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you all?
We're great,
doing
buddy.
Very, very well. So before we get into all things football and how everything's going for you, tell us a little bit about your involvement with the Eapen Open. I know you've been there in the past.
Yeah, I think I've been doing it for about 10 years. Great cause, good turnout, nice benefit, you know, all the proceeds go to the cancer research. So it's just something I partnered with about 10 years ago, and we always have a good time and, you know, a good turnout. So keep it going.
Yeah, it's supported over $100,000 to date to help support youth with disabilities and advanced blood cancer research. www.eapenopen.com for tickets and sponsorship opportunities. Who's your favorite person to play golf with?
Oh, it's some degenerates on this event. it's some real degenerates on this event. So, man, you know, it's really a good time. You know, I think when you talk to Marshall, he's always serious about golf, and like he comes to win the tournament. B. Mitch, you know, those guys come out to win the tournament. Me, I come out to make sure we play my shot every hole. We got to play at least one of my shots. And that's just, you know, like my real shot. I'm like, we're going to use my shot. And I'm going to have the best shot at some point. So for me, it's just like everybody, because you got a lot of business people that's out there and first time experience. So you're trying to make it good for them and make it fun for them. And they like, you know, this hole over here is serious. Want everybody quiet. These people over here, like running down the golf course with their shirts off. These people over here doing this. So it's just a good time, man. You know, I think everybody come out, and after all the work is done and after you raise what you raise, it's like that finale of, okay, all the work is done, let your hair down.
Clinton Portis on Grant and Danny. Last time we talked to you a couple of months back, you had just taken over as the running backs coach on the DeSean Jackson coaching staff. He is the head coach at Delaware State. You're going to be coaching RBs. I've seen you have been posting about things, so the camps that you guys have had as kids are trying to get offers and things like that. So where are you guys at in your prep for the season, and how deep into the coaching career are you now as you come up on your first summer?
Man, you know, it's been awesome, actually, especially the on-the-field work. The hands-on with the guys, that's always a great time. I think the adjustment to college sports where you have that only so many hours you could deal with kids, especially when you get going and, you know, you're on the hot streak or you're rolling, and then it's like, oh, like, you know, we're trying to finish, make sure we're an hour or two short so nothing happens. But the on-the-field work, you know, it's just like reading or riding a bike. Like, you think you lost it, and once you get back to it, it's like, oh, like I got it. Like, oh, now I remember how to walk this bike, or I remember how to do these tricks. So it's a good, you know, it's been good, and the kids are really receptive. They want to get better. They want to win. They want to change the culture. So being a part of that shift has been great. You know, and then in the portal, I think we won in the portal. We got a lot of kids that could have went bigger schools, that could have went elsewhere, that bought into what we were preaching and giving us the opportunity or helping us grow with them. So that's been dope. So, you know, on the 23rd, we get to get everybody in for the first time. You know, the kids we got out of the portal, the kids we signed from high school, everybody will be here at one time, like the workouts, everything, and you get to see your full, like, everything in motion. So up to this point, we haven't. It's just been kind of what we were, you know, dealt. And the development of those kids have been, like, so exciting and so enjoyable that we're looking forward to our first class.
Clinton Portis with us here on Grant and Danny. So I picked 10 years, kind of a nice round number. Clinton, I went back, and there were 10 players 10 years ago, 10 running backs, who accumulated 900-plus rushing yards. 10. So I picked 900 because it's like a regular starter who might have missed a game or two, something like that. It's like a, you know, a pretty big number, a 1,000-yard type back, but there were 10 guys. This past year, there were 22. All of a sudden, it seems like the running game is not only back, but it's big back. It's like everybody's doing it again to counter maybe what defense are doing. What have you seen big picture in the NFL over the last decade, and why is that, do you think?
Well, I think the realization of how important the running back position always has been is just kind of back. Then you see the teams that go and win the Super Bowls. You look at Kansas City, you look at the Eagles this year, the backs that they've had, the people that compete in the later months, you know, in the football months, all have a running back. And the teams that's normally throwing the ball around and put up all these stats are sitting home watching TV. So the realization of the Saquon Barkley of the world and how effective he was makes everybody. It's always a copycat league. And when you look at it, the Chiefs started something. And then it was like, oh, Patrick Mahomes don't have the receivers, so they won with the running back. But Patrick Mahomes did everything he could possibly do to help that running back out. And now when you look at the shift, you look at the Eagles and them having a running back, you know, carry them to that point. So it's just one of those, the attention is finally back on the running back position. You realize, okay, these quarterbacks, maybe it's a good 10 quarterbacks in the league, but all 32 of us don't have top-tier quarterbacks. So you're starting to play team ball again. And it's exciting because you want to see the running back position. You want to see the tight end position. I wish more teams would get a fullback, and that's what I'm shooting for here. Like, I need a fullback. I came from a fullback era, and I want to see what this collision is going to be like when a linebacker is 205 or 220, and I got a fullback that's coming downhill. You're going to get tired of filling that hole when we're running power, you know? So I think that would be a major advantage for us to have, and hopefully one of our guys pop up and we could actually use it.
Clinton Portis, one of the best backs of his era, helped carry the then Redskins to the playoffs on multiple occasions, joins us on Grant and Danny. What have you thought about Brian Robinson to this point? You know, there are a lot of folks, I think, early on, because he had such a great first training camp and preseason, that thought maybe he'd be a bell cow for years to come. And he's got the average now up over 4 yards per carry. But 3 years in, a lot of us are kind of ready to see something else, some speed, somebody who can hit home runs. What's your take on B-Rob and maybe why he hasn't been able to become a real impact guy?
I mean, the way I look at B-Rob is just maybe the wear and tear from college or looking at him last year, the short yardage, and he's always kind of like turning his shoulders. You know, his shoulders are to the sideline. Most backs, the top backs that you see, the Derrick Henrys, the Saquon Barkleys, those guys are going to finish, you know, facing the goal line. His shoulders are always going to be going towards the goal line. So for B-Rob, you know, I think it's like the mentality of a big play, but you're not really making the big plays. You know, every play you want to be a home run, and you got to get down on those, you know, third and seven, and you pick up 6 yards instead of putting your shoulder down and just bulldozing over. You know, I think he has to get that part of his game correct. I'm kind of thinking he was banged up last year, and it just haven't been said, or it wasn't a complaint, or I'm not sure if he had a off-season surgery or something. But to me, it just kind of seemed like he dodged a lot of contact or didn't come through with the emphasis on his runs, like finishing his runs. But it's always a league where you're going to bring in people and your replacement could already be on the team. You know, everybody behind you is just waiting on that opportunity to have a breakout game or waiting on you to get hurt. And you got to kind of be on point. You know, you got to be ready, come in and compete. You know, it's the off season. Get yourself together and don't worry about what happened last year. Come in, focus. I think they're building a good nucleus of players, and you have a leader in five, and, you know, hopefully everything get worked out with Terry. So you have two leaders over there, Ertz, you know. So you got players. It's just a matter of you coming in and getting your stuff together and making sure you contribute.
Clinton, if you were to design a running back kind of in a lab to fit with Jaden Daniels and this Cliff Kingsbury offense, like, what kind of player should it be? And do they have that kind of player on the roster?
Nah, I would be looking to see if Saquon want to leave the Philly.
That'd be nice.
Or drive right up the street. You know what I actually said earlier was, you know, going to get Cleveland running back, going to get Nick Chubb. You know, I thought bringing in Nick Chubb would be huge, because if he can return to form, you got to steal. You know, it's kind of like how teams were with Derrick Henry, and you're like, oh, okay, maybe he's done, maybe he's not. And he showed you, like, he's nowhere close to being done. So I thought that would have been huge for us to go out and get Henry, especially with some of the moves they had already made in the offseason. It would have been a great addition to the team. But coming off of those knee surgeries, it's hard to say, like, he's going to return to form. But to go out and find a back, you know, looking at a guy like James Cook or Saquon or Aaron Jones, you know, those guys that can kind of do everything, that's getting it done and making plays, you want them. I see J.K. Dobbins just went to the Broncos. You know, if you could keep him healthy, especially when you're in a two-back system, you know, you're looking for guys like that that, like, has the potential to be special but maybe haven't took it over the top yet.
Clinton Portis on Grant and Danny with us here on The Fan. Terry McLaurin wasn't at minicamp today. He's working out a contract still and at odds with the team over the numbers. I don't even remember from when I was covering you when I was still on the beat. Did you ever miss minicamps over contract stuff? And what's your general philosophy on that part of the business?
No, I didn't. The time that, you know, it could have been possible that I didn't even know the business of football when they asked me about minicamp and coming to camp and being around for the offseason, I ended up getting traded for Champ Bailey. So other than that, I was never in the position to be at, you know, a holdout or upset with my contract. So I never had to miss minicamp, and it was kind of like always looking forward, because that's where you start to get back in shape. You know, the emphasis of offseason kind of started with us. It wasn't as demanding. I mean, it wasn't as prominent as it is now. It kind of started with us, and, you know, guys were coming in shape. But that's where you use, and we always had a new OC, so we were learning. You know, it was hard to get repeat offense, so we were always learning. So we had to be around for training camp and mini camp.
Clinton, this is a real pleasure, man. Enjoy the weekend. It's eapenopen.com. It's eapenopen.com for tickets, sponsorship opportunities. It's a great cause. Celebrity guests, Marshall Faulk, Clinton Portis, Santana Moss, Warren Sapp, and others. A Whisker Creek golf course this Friday in Iamsville, Maryland. Really appreciate the time, buddy.
Hey, man, I'm still waiting on y'all to walk in Taco Chino's. I've been looking for y'all.
It's happening. It's going to happen. It's only a
matter
of time.
I'm just saying, I've been looking for y'all. That's why I'm going to give you your gear, all right?
Hey,
so let me know when y'all are
ready. I was going to say, I'm going to walk in there when I get my Delaware State Hornets hat.
Hey, that's why I'm going to deliver. It's going to be a fair exchange.
Okay. Love it. This is like some movie. Like, I'll blink my lights twice and then get out, and you got to bring the duffel
middle
back.
Of the desert casino style?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Blow all the right. horn twice, let me know it's you outside.
Love it.
All right, I'll text you. There's Clinton See Portis you, with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Always fun, always good to have him on the show.
Welcome back. Chucky's come to you live on 106.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. And let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Seven the Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. 910 the Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. We're streaming live on the free Odyssey app. And you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network, brought to you by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies, looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber. Just visit cropmetcalf.com to join their team. It's Bish, Cakes, EB, and JP. Joining us right now is Mike Rizzo, President GM of the Washington Nationals. He's presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Junkies. How are you?
Doing great. Well, doing all right.
I got to tell you, my buddy texted me last night, and huge Mets fan, huge baseball guy. You know how these New Yorkers are. He's like, you guys really got a good one in Gore. He's the real deal.
Yeah, he's been pitching great for about a year and a half for us. He's certainly had a good start to this year, and, he's progressing and learning each and every start, and, you know, his next step is to, last year, the first half of the year, he was great. He had hit a little lull in kind of the middle mm-hmm. of the season, and then finished strong the last seven starts. So we're trying to extend him to have continued success through that lull period of last year, and see if he can really turn the corner and become the ace that we think that he's going to be.
You know, Jason had a good question. Go ahead, ask
him. Yeah, I was just wondering. I mean, I know that for most of his starts, right around that 100-pitch mark is when he comes out. And last night, Davey took him out after 89 pitches, so he went six full. And then Lord came in, and he was fine in the seventh. But what was the rationale of taking McKenzie out after six and 89 pitches thrown?
I just think that, you know, the numbers say, the manager's eyes say, you know, the starting pitcher, they all confer about, you know, after come off the mound, and they thought that he had enough that day. He did that last night. He did his job. He got us, you know, had a quality start, got us through six good innings and turned it over to a bullpen that, you know, let's face it, Ferrer's been, you know, over his last 12 outings, and he's had a 0.66 ERA and a 1.36 opponent's batting average against. So, you know, we went with Lord Ferrer and Finnegan to try to finish that game, finish the last nine outs off, and Ferrer didn't get it done last night. But again, a young pitcher pitching in leverage innings, learning to trade, and it's got electric stuff, and just has to be a little bit more consistent with it.
Yeah. Tough lineup to go against, man, with Lindor and obviously Soto. Soto's been heating up. Alonso's been pretty hot all year. I think McNeil had a couple hits last night. Just a tough lineup to face.
Yeah, it's a grueling lineup. They're deep. They have a long lineup. They've got a lot of guys, even the bottom of the lineup guys can beat you. And you know, they're a highly paid, veteran laden ball club, and they're. You know, they're a tough team to play. And, you know, with that said, we split with them at home in four games, and, you know, we're hoping to take two out of three in this series. So we've been playing extremely tough, and I know they feel it when we come to play them. They know that we're going to give them everything we have. And, you know, we're a very talented but young and inexperienced ball club that's trying to get where they're going, you know, where they're at now in first place in the division.
How have you liked Lord so far? We talked about him maybe before the season because there was the article that he was working at Home Depot in the off season, but 3.77 ERA, he's got some holds. How have you liked his work so far?
He's been terrific for us. You know, stuff is electric. He's got three good pitches. You know, we still view him as a future starter, but this is a good way to get his feet wet in the big leagues and pitch leverage innings for us. You know, he's got that electric fastball that you know sneaks up on hitters. He's 94 to 95, touches six and seven with a good slider and a good change. So he's been great for us. And you're talking about it. A scouting and development success story, an 18th round pick that you know we drafted and developed into a really good major league pitcher. So we're proud of him, and he's got a very, very high ceiling and a bright future.
What's the update on the Dylan Cruz oblique strain at this point?
Cruz is still you know, not doing any baseball activities yet, not swinging the bat, but doing everything else. You know, he's. He's progressing nicely, and hopefully that you know when the oblique is fully healed, we'll get ramp him up and get him to play some rehab games and get him out there again.
How do you determine, Mike, when a muscle is fully healed? Like what imaging or whatever do you guys use?
Well, yeah, we use imaging, we use stimulation, we use a bunch of markers that you know bring us to the
to the
point where we think that the muscle is healed and now ready to rehabilitate. You know what I mean? First is you know, especially with an oblique, you almost have to shut the muscle down to let it heal, and then once it's fully healed, you get him back mobilization and stretching and strengthening, and then it becomes slowly into baseball.
Right.
You do baseball activities, and then you know you start ramping them up to take live swings, and then game swings, and rehab swings, and that type of thing. You know, the oblique is
it's difficult.
It's really a cumbersome injury because it's hard to do anything obviously without the core of your body. So
did he do that swinging or running? I couldn't remember.
I think he aggravated swinging, and I think he tipped it over when he was sprinting. But
right.
You know, those aren't one, you know, grabbing type of movement, a swing or that type of thing. But it's kind of a gradual thing that builds up, and then like one swing will over exaggerate the muscle where, you know, you feel something and then you have to say something about it. So gotcha. That's what happened with him.
I think we asked you last week, but after the last few games since last Wednesday, your take on what you've seen from Hassel, and how do you think he's looked, since he's taken over for Dylan?
I think he's doing fine. He's not overwhelmed with the situation. You know, playing in New York City, not overwhelmed. He's putting some competent at bats together. He's playing good defensively. You know, kind of trying to learn the nuances of all these ballparks. You know, especially the visiting ballparks. Well, yeah, Nationals Park was a new ballpark to him too when he got there, and so I think that it's a learning process. You throw him in the deep end of the water. You're playing every day. You know, center field and then right field, you're hitting against left-handed pitching, right-handed pitching, and you know, you're getting baptism by fire. But I think his attitude has been great. I think that his makeup allows him to do that and compete and fail and where it doesn't really hurt his mindset and his psyche. So I think he's done well.
It's amazing. He's already been up for 20 games. He's already played 20 games. Yeah, I mean, flying.
Time flying. Now, you know, when you look at it, since May 14th, we've been 13-9. You know, we've been playing pretty good baseball. And in our last, 58 games, since we started 1-6, we've been 29-29 on the season. So those are some of the positives that we're trying to extract out of the mid portion of the season. We've got a lot of young guys competing for us. I think you see the young talent base. I know the other opposing teams do. They mention it to me all the time. And you know, when you're able to compete against and beat a team like the New York Mets, built the way they're built, it shows what these guys are capable of doing. But we're just scratching the surface. We got 16 games in 16 days. Mm. We go out to a big 9-game West Coast swing, which is always grueling and tough. So, by All-Star break, we'll have a good feel for who we are and who's who on this club.
Mike, I'm asking you a question. I'm not trying to ask you a question that's like not fair or anything or put you on the spot. But can you look at the roster? Do you have in your mind and say we're three players away? Like, I'm not asking you to say the players that you know, or anything like that, but can you say, do you have a number in the back of your mind where, like, okay, I think I need two more position players and maybe two more starters, and then, you know what I mean? Is that a thing? Is that something you have in your mind? Like, we're getting, like, inching, as you're inching closer?
Yeah, I think that, you can see the future pieces on this team. You know, that doesn't take, you know, Branch Rickey to figure out,
right,
you know, who's the keepers and who's the guys that you have to figure, you know,
yeah,
that we have to improve in. So I think you're always looking at your team and your roster and saying that, you know, we can really fill this gap here, would be nice. And then this, and you never have enough starting pitching and you know that. And, do you have these pieces that you think you can fill these spots in the minor league system, or do you have to go externally to get them? And those are always the questions that you ask yourself and your staff to try and figure out. And I think that as this season gets clearer and clearer and clearer, I think that those questions,
the numbers are shrinking.
Will be clearer. Yeah,
right. The numbers are shrinking. Like, we're getting there.
I think you could see that we're playing much better. I think the way we're competing with other teams is better. We've won series against some really good teams. Mm-hmm. I think that, like I said, you know, we had a 1-6 start. We're holding our own at, you know, a 29-29 since then. So I think that you could see that, it's a team on the come, especially when you're one of the two or three youngest teams in the league, and when you have some of your best minor league, some of your best players that are still in the minor league, so that's often exciting for our staff to look at, and you may have some of these positional questions, you may have an answer in your own system.
Right.
That's, that's the good part.
I know that my question might sound kind of silly, but like when we won it all in 2019, because we have rings.
We are World Series champions.
You also have to have, not always, I don't think. I don't know. I'm not a historian, but you have to have a blend. And you had a blend of those veterans that kind of came in, the guy that was doing all the,
Shark.
Yeah, the baby shark guy. What I mean? Like, you had the perfect blend, Para? It seemed like that. Yeah, Para, yeah. Who's I think is on their staff.
Yeah.
You can see it with the Mets team right now. You know, they've got a bunch of good veteran players that are are surrounding a handful of good young players that you filter in. You got some big time high priced players with some minimum salary rookie players. And I think that's the mix and the ingredients that it takes to have a championship caliber club. It's difficult to I think on our team right now we have about 14 or 15 homegrown players on our team. I think most of the pitching staff and most of the bullpen and two or three of the starters are homegrown. Or gotten in a trade from a homegrown player. So, young homegrown players, when you mix that in with with some veterans to take some pressure off them, I think that is a recipe for success. And, we did that blueprint, back when we were, from 12 to 19, when we were really good. We mixed a lot of young players that we drafted and developed in our own system and either traded those players away to acquire major league talent to help us win, at this time, or we kept those players and they played for us for, throughout their first 5 or 6 years of the contract. So I think that's the key. Have good young players, and have them play for you on the big league level, or trade them to acquire players that'll help you play on the big league level.
We're still a month away from the draft. What percentage of your day is still talking to your scouts about who you guys are going to take at one? That's still a big part of your day right now?
It's a big part of the day. One is an easier question to answer right now than talking about the entirety of the draft and the strategy of the draft what strategy are we going to employ, with one combined with who's going to be left, at 45 in the third round or fourth round and so on and so forth. So it's, I talked to those guys several times a week right now, and they were just in for a scouting meeting, amateur scouting meeting last week. We were inundated with that for about 5 days last week of doing it all day. So we've got a good feel for where we're at and what we're doing. Now it's kind of just monitoring, because it's funny, the only guys that are still playing baseball that are going to be in this draft are there 8 teams that are left in the College World Series. So oftentimes these high school players, they play a full season and then have to sit around for a month and a half or so before the draft.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, can we make a bet on you? Just a $1 bet amongst us. Don't answer it.
Like betting. Right.
Has Mike Rizzo ever watched a Savannah Bananas game?
A full game?
No,
maybe
chance.
An inning.
He's aware of them.
He knows. Definitely knows who they are.
I'm saying
no.
Has he, yeah. Yes, I'll answer it. I have not watched a full game of them, but I have seen them.
Would
play
you go? Would you be hilarious. Entertained?
Oh, it
you
is
would
funny.
Like it.
Yeah.
Oh, I think they're hilarious. Yes, they're hilarious. A lot of ex minor league players are in those things.
Right.
I remember when we had them in our ballpark. Gio pitched an inning for them. He pitched an inning. They always have these local big league players whenever they're into ballparks, and they started in minor league parks. Then they sold out our spring training facility a couple of times. Now they're selling out, major league ballparks. It's a phenomenon. They're fun to watch.
They're coming back to Nats Park in a few weeks.
They are. They are. I think we have them a couple of games this year. It's
fun. Cool.
Oh, there you
all
go.
Right.
You might
have kind of passionate.
You might have thought he was like,
That's what I thought.
Like an old school guy, but no.
Wouldn't you have thought that too?
Maybe a little bit. Yeah.
Geez, guys are doing backflips, then catching a fly ball. It's
that's
crazy.
That's nuts.
That's impressive.
All right, Mike, good stuff. It's Mike Rizzo.
Nats
GM, President Baseball Ops.
Thank you, buddy.
Brought to you by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information.
Riz.
He's good, man. He likes us. How come we got to do, Jason, will you pick a game? Let's just go, a game that you're, because I'll go to anything, a game that you're open to going to. Let's go.
I'm actually going to Saturday's game. I'm sitting in those seats that you were sitting in.
Oh, yeah. Baller seats.
But I'm sitting in the baller seats.
I know, but pick one where we all go and hang out with them, sit in there. And
you got to find like a Thursday afternoon game.
Should I go up to the to his
I never his have, suite, but you have more balls than me.
And just introduce my wife and daughters to him?
Yes.
I think I should.
I mean, it's sure. A good flex.
Why not?
Before
the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Not during the game.
It's a good flex to show off your kids think you're a big time, but he doesn't care about it.
Of course he doesn't.
Yeah. But I mean, if it makes your kids think you're
Why would I think that he would care?
Well, I'm just saying, like, it's a nuisance to him, actually. But
to
the daughters, it'll make you look good.
The thing is, he usually shows up, like, right before first pitch.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of time
Because he's down on the field and
I don't know where he is. He's in his office.
Right.
Talking about who they're going to draft at number one.
Well, it sounds like they already know who they're drafting at one. That's what it sounded like. Like, one's kind of like, that's an easy one.
Yeah.
It should be an easy one.
Yeah.
Is he going Holiday?
I don't know.
Is it going to be Ethan Holiday?
I have no idea. But
is it going to be that Jamie Arnold dude, the pitcher from Florida State? That guy's a stud.
I don't know. It'd be hard to pass on the bloodline, those Holiday bloodlines.
Yeah, that's true.
One guy whose energy I just feel is really, really, what's the right term? You gravitate off it. Like,
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You too, B. but I've really been impressed by Daryl Tapp, and it's also
cool. I like Tapp.
And he's a local guy, played at Tech, grew up rooting for the Burgundy of Gold, and
he has good vibes.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. But one thing that's interesting is I think a lot of Commanders fans are a little uneasy about the edge position specifically and maybe the D-line as a whole. And I got to talk to Daryl Tapp at length. Ben Standig and I were both part of this interview, so I want to make sure I mention Ben. But I think you're going to learn something here, particularly about Javon Kinlaw and how the organization views him.
The D-line looks a lot bigger.
A little bit.
Was that by design?
That was definitely by design. As you know, everybody in NFC East loves to run the ball. Unique guy in Philadelphia that we got to make sure we're conscious of. So it was by design. Getting some guys that had some size to them. Getting some guys that have played a lot of ball. Getting guys that are strong and versatile. Like, that was the mindset. And I'm very happy that Coach Q and AP were able to get that done to help out Coach Witt, myself, Sharif, and Ryan to where we can put some guys out there to stop this run and to rush the passer.
One guy I want to ask specifically about, and I feel like it's kind of gone under the radar, but what does Eddie Goldman bring to this team? Where's he at?
Man, he is a massive man that's played some ball, very smart. He just understands the game, man. So having a chance to really work with him has been cool to see where his football mind is. Like, you can see why he's had success at every place that he's been.
Is he kind of situational? Is he? I can't imagine he's a three-down guy, but like against the run, like you get in goal line or perhaps tush-push situations, Is that a guy that really stands out?
Yeah, he's a. Let's put some respect on Eddie's name now. He's a versatile big man, like a guy that's 300 plus pounds that can run to the ball, that can stop the run, that can get on the edge. Like, those guys just don't walk around the earth. Like, he is a athletic guy. Now, for us, it's all about putting guys in position to make plays. And that's the one thing that Coach Witt really likes and really strives for. Like, if you have on a jersey on game day, you're going to contribute to this team. That's just the way we do things around here. So we're always trying to find ways to utilize him, utilize DeRon different ways, with Kinlaw coming to the mix, with Javonte Jean-Baptiste and Jerzon and all these guys. Like, how can we put them in position to make plays? That's what we're trying to focus on. And it may be situational, and it may be just on first thing that we don't know yet. Like, we won't really understand those things until we get to training camp and those bullets really start to fly.
Speaking of Kinlaw, it feels like the conversation around him has been confusing for a lot of people because nobody knows exactly where he's going to play. The signing kind of came out of left field. What do you kind of say are his strengths, and how do you guys look to utilize that.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's came out of left field for y'all, but it was by design by us. See, AP had him in San Fran. Yeah. I had the honor of working with that young man back in 21 in my first opportunity being back in the league as a coach. And that's kind of where we built our relationship. He's a local kid from D.C. You guys know that whole story. But to see everything that young man put into getting himself prepared to go, like he had some injury stuff that went on, and I was able to see him battle back each and every time something happened in San Fran, 21 to 22, where he got healthy in 23, where he made the run out there. He was more of in a backup role just due to circumstances, but he had a pretty good year as a backup player. And then last year, seeing him from afar in San Fran, not San Fran, in New York, where he had his first healthy year, he did some really good things. So we're witnessing an ascending player. Like, you guys forget, like, we get confused seeing like the contract and all that stuff. Like, this is an ascending player that's really got his best ball in front of him. And the best thing about it, he's kind of in the same boat as me, with me being a coach here for the Commanders and being a former Skins guy and being a Virginia kid. He's the exact same person. So it's not just a job to him. This is personal. Like, to be able to rep for a team that he grew up watching, to be able to play freely for a GM that had confidence in him, to give him the help get him to San Fran as a draft pick, and with a D-line coach that is able to see him grow from a puppy now to a full-grown dog. Like, he has some stuff on his chest and on his shoulder that he's trying to show the world. So that's exciting to see him in that space.
So one thing that's maybe tough for us, right, because you see his body type. And
massive.
He's huge.
Yoked.
But I can't figure out where you – like, what is his comp? What is
Everywhere.
His ceiling?
Yeah.
Everywhere. That's where we put him, everywhere. Utilize that guy. Honestly, his ceiling is the sky. That's the saying. Because he's so big and he's so athletic that he's a top five pick, like, for a reason. Like, because that guy has that ability, and he can play in any scheme. He can play attack. He can play read attack. He can play mirror. He can do whatever you need to do. That guy can do it. And the biggest thing that I appreciate, the best thing about him that I appreciate, is that he works. You get a lot of guys that kind of just rest in their laurels and, hey, my natural talent and ability will take me everywhere. Not JK. JK works. He works his tail off. I guarantee you right now, if we call him, he's in somebody's gym or on somebody's table getting a massage or dry needling or something like that. He is constantly working, and that's what's going to allow him to hopefully have one of his best years this year. And with Coach Witt and talking to Coach Q and brainstorming with Ryan and Reef and myself, like, how do we get this guy on the field in positions to help us to not only stop the run but rush the passer? Just don't think because we see a man that's 6'6 or whatever he is and 305 pounds and 330 pounds that he's just a run stopper. No, he can affect the game any way that needs to be affected. And that's the thing right now. We're just continuing to spoon feed this guy. There's a lot of similarities to what he's done in the past, but there's also a lot of different nuances that Coach Witt has brought here that is going to help make us and make him that much better.
To help the fans and others understand the context of what he is, that there's been this thought DQ's had this elephant position in the past. You know, it's sort of that's the run stopping edge kind of a guy. He's not a sleek edge rusher, so is that?
He ain't sleek. Well, he's trying to say poorly.
relative to Ryan Kerrigan, you know what I mean. So I guess how does you mentioned also stopping guys like Saquon. I mean, it seems like that's why on a lot of levels he's here, to maybe have him be help set that edge that was a little more problematic last year. Is that a way to sort of help contextualize what he'd be able to help do?
Not necessarily. Well, remember, we also just signed Dedrick Wise, who's a massive man that's played D-end as well. So the goal is to get bigger, to get athletic, and to be interchangeable with everybody that we sign. So it's unfair to say that you're going to peg JK into that elephant role, because we have a Dedrick Wise. We have Cleveland Farrell, who's come back and he's healthy. We have Javonte Jean-Baptiste, who looks like a totally different player this year, just size-wise, spending a lot of time in the weight room eating red meat and doing a bunch of stuff to make himself stronger. So we're going to be better this year, like I said, in year two, because we understand what the pitcher is, what the vision is now, and that's allowed these guys to go prepare and play free in these OTAs. Hopefully we can use that to jump springboard us into training camp.
You brought up red meat. Is Wise a vegan?
Why is it? I say that about Javonte, not vegan.
I know, but that's what triggered my memory.
Yes, D. Wise is a vegan.
You've been around football your whole life, coaching, playing. Have you ever had a D lineman that's a vegan?
I have not, but clearly he knows what he's doing because he is every bit of what, 6'5", 280? Like, it's strong, like, unique guys in this room, man. Like, really savvy individuals. They're aware of their bodies. They're aware of how to get themselves prepared to go to practice each and every day. And I got to assume it's going to carry over to the season. Just the intent and the mindset those guys have. Like, it's pretty cool to see these guys just in their element each and every day.
I mean, for me, when I think of a guy like Dietrich Wise, like, he played for Bill Belichick.
No doubt.
He knows what he's doing.
No doubt. No doubt about it. And having a guy like that helps everybody in the room.
Well, and two guys we haven't mentioned, Johnny, fully healthy, and then Deron. Like, just how are both those guys looking this offseason?
Deron, alpha male, elite. Like, last year, he led by example. We had a conversation. I challenged him a little bit to continue to do the same thing he was doing, but to be more vocal with it. Like, take over. And he's taking that thing wholeheartedly and run with it, man. He's making corrections to the guys before I even get a chance to do it, which is so cool to see, because that now raises the floor of the entire room. So having that guy in there, I couldn't ask for anything more with DP. Like, he is intent on getting 1% better each and every day, each and every play. And then with Johnny, like, I'm so excited for that young fella, man. Like, he had a tough hand last year coming in and being banged up, and then getting thrown into the deep end immediately when John got banged up, which was not by design, but it helped him tremendously, because now he was able to be a big boy in the league and play some legit ball, and he was able to learn by fire. Sure. So that stuff is going to circle back to this year, to where now it's not going to be anything that catches him off guard, because he's been in those situations earlier than we all envisioned. We thought last year we would have a three-man rotation, and like I said, he got kind of banged up. By the time he finally got healthy, then John went down. And then when John came back, then Deron went down. So we never really had what we wanted to have. But he's setting himself up for this offseason, taking the corrections, watching the film, to really have a good role for himself this year. And I'm excited to see what he does with it.
Daryl Tapp's got energy, man.
Man, Daryl is talking fired up. But he speaks eloquently.
He's got a real charisma.
Hey, man, listen. What I took away from that, everyone just assumed that all these guys were here because they're big. Yes, they're bigger, but they're all athletic. And they're not one-dimensional. They could do multiple things. You know, Kinlaw and Goldman, he's talking about those guys. Goldman's a big dude. But he runs to the ball. He doesn't just stay in one spot all day, you know, like the big boys they had from Panthers back in the day.
Yeah.
Kinlaw is a pass rusher and a run stopper. You have to get you want to get bigger to compete against those guys, but you also want to have guys that can do multiple things. Because if you just get bigger and they can't do but one thing, teams can manipulate that. But they got guys that they feel are better. And you know what I'll do? I'll go along with these football minds over half of the people out there that just make comments.
Yeah, I think if you're pessimistic about something, you're allowed to be. But these guys, I love how Tapp was like, it might have come out of nowhere for y'all, but that was a target for us, talking about Kinlaw.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty clear it was a target for them when Tapp coached them and Peter scouted them back with the Niners.
Yeah.
And they went and got them. And if you want to get caught up about the contract, I think you're wrong. It's a tier 3 D-line contract. It's really not that big of a deal in the big grand scheme of things. But
if you don't know the vocabulary of what you're discussing, it's a bad thing for you. When you just look at stuff and you want to talk because you're a target person, it's okay. But when people start asking you to break it down and you can't, shut the hell up.
We are pleased right now to go to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, to talk to one of the great running backs of my lifetime and one of the best to ever do it, a Hall of Famer who's a 3-time All-Pro and a 7-time Pro Bowler. Marshall Faulk is with us on Grant and Danny. Marshall, you're on in the DMV. Thanks for a few minutes. How are you?
What's going on, guys? What's going on?
Pleasure to have you. And I know this weekend, you're. We talked to Clinton Portis about this yesterday, but you're at the Eapen Open, EAPENOpen.com for tickets, sponsorship opportunities, founded to help battle leukemia and lymphoma society. So kids can soar, a whole bunch of wonderful causes kind of tied into one. I know you've been tied to this tournament for a number of years. What drew you to it?
Well, just the work that they do. And a lot of times, you know, when we were kids or when we have kids, we don't think about the things that happen to kids who grow up or whom are born with these issues. And, you know, we got to think about them and using my likeness, my name and my likeness to raise money to give these kids a chance at a better life, a better quality of life. It's easy to do. Very easy to do.
Well, it's admirable that you're doing it. And again, it's the Eapen Open. And for people who want more information, they can check out the site, EAPNOpen.com. Marshall Faulk is with us on Grant and Danny. Marshall, to say that you came early or maybe at an era, maybe one ahead of where you would have been best used, is probably flawed because you had one of the great careers ever.
You did just fine, yeah.
But I think about all the time. You had a stretch of 5 straight years where you caught 80 or more passes. And you could educate me better. I remember like Charlie Garner and a couple guys, maybe others that were heavily involved in the passing game. But I just wonder nowadays with the check down no longer being a pejorative and teams liking to move the ball, throw into the running backs, like what some of those numbers could look like for you. Was it in vogue at all? Was it happening in other places when you started being one of the best receivers as a running back?
I mean, I don't want to make it seem like I was the first to do it. I probably took it to another level. Guys like Ronnie Harmon, Thurman Thomas, James Brooks, and the guy who deserved to be in the Hall of Fame for sure, Roger Craig, they did it. I mean, they did it. The way that I did it and then moving me out as a receiver, those were the things that kind of separated how I did it. And I believe now, you know, you look at the position – and the position has changed. You either have a bunch of backs to do a different thing, or you have a back who can do everything. And for a minute, we kind of got lost and thought that the back who did everything was gone. And then Saquon Barkley reminded us, like, oh, that's what it looks like. There it is right there. So happy for him that he did what he did. And happy for the position, even Derrick Henry. And then watch the teams pay the guys as well.
Yeah, what have you made of that, of the kind of the fall off where the running back position became borderline expendable, Marshall, to now it seems to be we're in the middle of a renaissance where everyone's going, oh, that's right, if you have a back like a couple of those guys you mentioned, it really can make a huge difference. What have you made of that entire phenomenon?
Listen, in football, they'll find a way to try to phase you out. and if you give them a reason to, then they'll do it even more so. And the position became that because, you know, guys didn't take it as serious. They didn't want to be every down backs. They got into the, you know, they wanted to save themselves and they didn't want to do this and didn't want to do that. And it became bad for the position. And what happens when that happens is they try to find a way to do it without you. And so a lot of guys found themselves in bad situations where teams wouldn't pay them. They started letting back to go. And we saw the landscape of what it started to look like. The position looked extinct. But now we got some guys on the rise and some young guys coming in. Ashton Genty showed us, like, you put the numbers up, that's what they'll do. They'll pay you. And the position is back to where it is. And let me tell you guys this. Look, you know this. Quarterback throws the ball. It looks all fancy. But when you get to playoff football and you get to the Super Bowl, we always talk about the team who runs the ball is going to win. It always happens.
Well, I look at the MVP voting last year, and Josh Allen ended up running away with it. Saquon Barkley finished third. I mean, people forget Lamar, head and shoulders better, and he didn't get a first-place vote. He got one second-place vote. It was basically mostly third through fifth-place votes for Saquon Barkley, who, had he not have chosen not to in the final week, would have broken the rushing record, 2,000 yards, put the Eagles on his back, best team in the conference. And I ask you this as a former MVP, have we seen the end of even a running back being allowed, maybe isn't the right word, to win MVP? Like the year before, remember with McCaffrey, everyone was like, oh, it can't be him, no way. isn't the running back ever going to win that award again, you think?
Oh, most definitely. I believe so. I don't want to take anything away from Josh and what he has done. But man, the guy was so close so many times. And it almost felt like just for the sake of the Buffalo Bills, like, man, they had to win something. You know, like you just keep getting there. Patrick Mahomes keep knocking you off. You have to win something. And here's the thing. When you look at the numbers between Josh and Lamar, I mean, they look very similar.
Right.
You know, they look very similar. It's just they decided that Josh deserved it more. And that's when it comes to that award, when you start to look at, you know, who deserves it, it's an award. And people get to make that decision. So
I just wonder, I mean, Saquon goes for 2,000 yards and did something we hadn't really seen. And it felt like even at the end of the season, he was not really
in the running. Yeah, there's seven quarterbacks ahead of him. Yeah.
It's just like, what does a guy have to do at that position? Nowadays, they're like, oh, you're the offensive player of the year. And the MVP seems to be the best quarterback award.
Yeah, we've created the league that we have.
Yeah.
And that's all we could do as running backs is play in it. Unfortunately for Saquon and all the other running backs, you know, you go out, you don't make MVP a priority. You make winning the Super Bowl a priority. And I believe that's what these guys are going to do because when you look at the landscape of the league has created how we have it. You protect the quarterback the way you protect him. I mean, you damn near can't hit a quarterback if he pretends to slide. And if you don't slide, you give up another 10 yards. What happens there? They've made this league a passing league because if you don't have a quarterback, you can't sell tickets.
Marshall Faulk with us here on Grant and Danny. Marshall, going back to your career, as prolific as you were, forgive me of my inability to remember all of this, but did you run out of the gun ever or a lot?
I mean, yes, maybe. I mean, once in a while.
What do you make of that now? That's kind of the new paradigm, right? Because obviously with a guy like Jaden Daniels or Lamar Jackson, you want to take advantage of that the bind it puts the defense in. How much harder is that, and how different is that for a running back to be able to kind of get that same momentum and the read and the like?
No, I think it's tough, it's challenging, but when you have a quarterback in the likes of a Lamar or a Josh, the element of playing 11-on-11 football, it exists.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to present it, and you need to make, because defenses are good, man. You want to make them work hard. And this creates that.
Yeah, because to your point, when you're going from under, you know, Warner's under center or whoever, and you're deep in the backfield, it's 10 against 11, really, because the quarterback can't help you. So now you're just even
exactly.
The playing field.
Exactly. There you go. There you go. And now you make one guy miss and you got a touchdown.
Marshall Faulk with us on Grant and Danny. You mentioned Ashton Jeanty. I don't know how closely you followed this, but the quick cliff notes would be he had this, I forget what he called it, but he had this style where he stood straight up and it wasn't something that we'd seen anybody do in the NFL before the snap. And basically, obviously, he goes and runs for 2,600 yards and 29 touchdowns and he gets picked at the top of the board. And right away as he's drafted, he's told by Pete Carroll and company, you got to get in the stance that we want you to. You're not doing the straight up thing anymore. Would you let a guy kind of be himself, or are you more along the lines of the stuff that worked for you, you know, for Boise State was cute, but here's how we do it in the league?
You know, it's crazy and asinine that we're having this conversation. You know, and if you remember, a quarterback that ran the football couldn't play in the NFL as well. You know, and I feel bad for Pete at the age of whatever he is, that he thinks the stands make a back. And just because cosmetically he needed to look the way he wanted to look is the problem why coaches get left behind. And probably why he's in Vegas instead of Seattle. We need to focus on what wins games instead of what things look like.
Is there a team that you're kind of looking at coming into this season where you go, watch out for this group? And we have that worst to first thing every year. It seems like there's like a different NFC South champion almost every other season. It seems like, and that kind of the normal phenomenon. Is there a team that you've kind of got circled where you're, you know, kind of siding up to people at parties going, watch out for this group?
This is not because we're on this call, but it's because of what they looked like last year. And I think it's the Commanders, man. Like I really like the moves that they made. I like how they played last year, and it was just they really surprised a lot of people. And you know, Jaden, man, I was just impressed at how poised he was, even in the loss in the playoffs. Just the things that he was able to do. I believe it's changed the mindset of what people think about young quarterbacks now when they come into the league.
Yeah, we hadn't seen anything like it. Marshall Faulk, Hall of Famer. Last one for me, Marshall. You know, you talked a little bit about the moving back to the run and the fact that, you know, it's such a pass-heavy league now based on kind of the dictation from the top down. As you watch the game now, like if you were, whether it's calling plays or coaching, maybe it's along the lines of what we were just talking about with Pete, what are some of the things you would look to bring with you and kind of change about the trends in the NFL and or what isn't being taken advantage of enough, in your opinion?
Let's say everything is being taken advantage of, but I would literally give the defense a better chance. You know, I would this defenseless receiver stuff, this overprotection of the quarterback, it's gone too far to where, as a defensive guy, I really don't know how you're supposed to play defense. I don't know what you're supposed to do. If it's a running quarterback, they get more liberties. If you watch the quarterbacks that are athletic, you hit them in the head, you do certain things to them, they don't call the flag. But you give me a pocket passer, you touch him, and all the flags fly. I just don't like it. Like we need to treat the quarterback like he plays football, like the rest of us, and allow him to play tackle. And you don't have to get a note from his mom, nor do you have to put a light on his head when you touch him. He's down. Like, let him play football.
The great Marshall Faulk, kind enough to join us here. The Eapen Open this Friday at Whisker Creek Golf Course in Iamsville, Maryland, hosted by Marshall Faulk, Clinton Portis, Santana Moss, Warren Sapp, and more. 21st year of existence, raises funds for So Kids Soar and the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Raised over $100,000 to support youth with disabilities and advanced blood cancer research. Go to eapenopen.com, eapenopen.com for tickets and sponsorship opportunities. Marshall, this is a treat, man. Thank you.
All good. Y'all have a good one.
We appreciate you. That was a pleasure. Marshall Faulk, I will stack up his run from 97 to 2002.
He was so great.
6 years of Marshall Faulk against just about any 6-year stretch for any running back. When he was averaging 80 plus catches, but he was also going for 1,200 or 1,300 yards on the ground during that time. That was as big a heater. He was an All-Pro 3 times in a row during that stretch. He was a Pro Bowler throughout. But he won MVP once. He was a runner-up for MVP 2 other times. He was in the top 5 in MVP, I think, all 5 of those years. That was Colts into Rams, yeah, right at the turn of the millennium. That was the greatest show on turf. Kurt Warner, Oz Hakeem, weird to say him next, but Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, Oz Hakeem, like that whole group, that was my squad. Yeah, that was everybody's squad.
The end of his time in Indianapolis in 98, right, where you go 13-20 on the ground and 900 in the air, right, with 80-plus receptions, they went, oh, that seems like we found something. And then that just was his norm for the next several seasons in St. Louis.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.